Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, if only one person had been more aware and understanding of what a Ouija board could do, tragedy may have been prevented.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
Yep, 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. We'd absolutely love to hear them. Of course, you can write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. And if you like our show, keep us on the air. Become an extra podcast person, an EPP as we call them. Sign up at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. $5 a month gets you access to all of our bonus episodes, our advanced episodes, the ebook, the audiobook, and so much more. Again, ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories to get in on all of that. Tony and Harper with you on today's episode of the program.
Hi.
Hi, what's going on with you?
Well, we are getting the cabinets and the brick painted.
In our kitchen, yes.
Yes.
Yes, so have you been absorbing all of the fumes in the house of the paint?
No, I've been upstairs in my office.
That's probably good, yeah. Because I think I'm going to be avoiding that part of the house for a couple days, because it's going to be a little, Yeah. So it's kind of weird, too, because we have that going on in the kitchen, and you can't really do anything. I can't really cook anything. I can't really... So I guess we're going to have to go out here into the yard and into the field where the animals are. We may have to find ourselves some meat.
No. We are ordering takeout.
Okay, that's probably an easier idea. Would that be better?
Yes.
Okay, so, well, I'm glad, you know, I was kind of eyeing up. There's a cow back there that looks a little bit...
No. That's my cow best friend.
I'm kidding. I would never eat your cow best friend. Those are great cows. They love coming up to you and just giving you, you know, rubbing their heads on you.
They're so cute.
Yeah. You know. And of course, if you follow us on social media, you can see our many pictures of our farm friends. You can follow me at Tony Bruski, B-R-U-E-S-K-I. And you can follow Harper now on TikTok too, right?
Yeah. HLV 961.
Yep. And see her crazy videos as well. So there you go. Let's go to our first story today. Our phone number is 855-853-4802 to share your real ghost stories with us. It says, I heard one of your episodes when you were talking about Ouija boards. The whole time I'm listening to the other stories I wanted to share. This happened in the small town of Burke Burnett, Texas. I was about 18 years old at the time. It was a Friday night. I had a few friends over at my house. My brother did as well. We're all sitting around telling jokes about girls, things like that. We somehow got into a subject of ghosts. Most of them were saying how ghosts were not real. I personally believe in ghosts, but I have yet to see one. Well, one of my brother's friends asked if anyone were interested in going to a local cemetery to see if we could find anything. Nobody wanted to go. One of my friends said he had an idea. He said his sister owned a Ouija board and wanted to go get it and bring it back. Most of my brother's friends were saying how that stuff was stupid and they sell that stuff at Toys R Us. My friend ended up running home to retrieve his sister's Ouija board, and he finally returned. We all went back into the bedroom to open the box, lit a few candles around all of us, attempt to make it a spookier environment. As all of us were sitting around the board, my brother's friend asked who we were going to summon first. Nobody had any ideas. My friend Rob said, well, my grandmother died 5 years ago. Let me try to get to her. He put his hand on the planchette and started calling his grandmother's name. After about a minute of nothing happening, he called out her name again. Still, nothing happened. My brother's friend laughed and said, ha, your grandmother doesn't want to talk to your dumbass. I asked if anyone had anybody else that we could try. My brother's friend said he had an uncle that was in a motorcycle crash a long time ago, and he did not survive. He then put his hand on the planchette and started calling out his uncle's name. Again, after a few attempts, we got no response. And so we were getting a little aggravated that nothing was working. Well, my brother started to laugh and said, I got someone. I asked him who, and he looked at everyone and said, are you ready for this? He put his hand on the planchette and said, "I call on the devil in the flesh. Show yourself, Lucifer." My friend looked over at my brother and said, "Are you crazy?" He then said it once again, "Come on, show yourself." For some reason, I was feeling sick to my stomach, like I was about to pass out. My brother said this one last thing before it happened. He said, "That's what I thought." Suddenly, the candles all go out at the same time. I heard my friend scream, and then I heard someone going towards the door. The lights come on as my brother's friend had flipped the switch, and in front of us all was the scariest thing. The entire Ouija board was covered in what appeared to be blood. A terrifying thing about it was there were several bloody handprints that looked to be from a child on the wall. None of us had hands as small as the prints were. We all began to check to see ourselves if anyone was bleeding, trying to pull a prank. None of us had a scratch. I walked around the house to see if anyone had brought a bucket of fake blood or something as a sick joke. My friend said, "Why would I bring a bucket of fake blood? When I came back, you would have seen it. There would have been no way to sneak in that much blood." That night scared the crap out of me. Of course, I did not sleep that night, or the next for that matter. I was not going to dare tell my mother what happened. She would have beat our asses for even messing with a board like that. Anyway, huge fan of the show, is excited to tell the story. Thank you so much for reading.
I think the brother is the devil. That kid's savage.
That's insane to do something like that.
Yeah. And also say something actually pretty hurtful. When one of the kids was trying to call on their grandmother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
As you were reading that story, I was over here laughing, like,
yeah,
that kid's so savage.
And what kids will do. So there you go. Take that as a cautionary tale for yourself, Harper.
Yep.
As you get older and your friends try to do stupid things, you can be like, "No, I don't think so." But I could see you being the one that brings in a bucket of fake blood.
Oh, yeah. So me.
Just remember, that stuff stains, so...
Yeah, I don't really care.
So you don't... Well, you don't bring it into someone else's house or our house, because that stuff stains. And as funny as it would be, you'd have to, like, redo the room. That I've used fake blood. You know how I like making, like, Halloween decorations and stuff?
Yeah.
And I'll buy sometimes, like, the gallon of the fake blood.
Yeah.
And that is the worst stuff to get out of things. Now, real blood is as well. But I swear this stuff is, like, just as bad, because it's like you pour it on something, or you accidentally get it somewhere you don't want to, or like on your hands, and it's like worse than paint. It's just, it's there. I don't know what it's made out of, but it's just blah. So
don't mess with fake blood, kids.
Be careful with your fake blood. Be careful with your fake blood. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. We would love to hear them here on the program. I got a long call here that I've been waiting to use for quite a while, and I think this may be a good time to run the super long call, and it'll probably take up a majority of the rest of the show.
How long is it?
It's about a 15-minute or so call, so okay. Let's take a listen. This could be a good ghost story. Hi, let's hear it.
So I wanted to give you... an experience that I had, that several people had at a home in Kalinga, California, where we had moved to in 1998 from San Jose, California. Just to give you a quick background, because it is important. I am a Native American. My parents were both, half Native American and half Spaniard. My grandmothers immigrated from Spain. My grandfathers, were Apache. Similar to a lot of experiences that fellow Native Americans have here in the United States, poverty, domestic violence, substance abuse was very rampant in my home. I grew up in a very dysfunctional household. Now that's important because my father oftentimes would disappear from us, or just kind of leave us without running water, and go on a bender for, you know, weeks at a time. And so we had relocated to this country cow patty town in the middle of Fresno County, to get away from San Jose, which was considerably more expensive. And we settled into this home on Alfred Street. And it was a 3-bedroom, very modest home, built on cinder blocks. It was raised, of course. It was like, you know, kind of built in a very old fashioned way. And we immediately started noticing various unexplainable activity. We were not a religious family at all. And being Native, although we were semi-traditional, my dad absolutely does not believe in ghosts. I had very, it wasn't something I really considered at that stage of my life. And my mom was just apathetic to the whole thing. So anyways, we started noticing very, you know, peculiar things, such as, walking, like the sound of someone walking around on our roof. At one point we had to investigate that. You know, three of us armed with a baseball bat and, sharp objects. We, climbed into the attic because we really believe that a homeless person had actually, was nesting in our attic because of the noise. We just had, there was several things that happened, that were pretty unnerving. But what I'm calling about is one particular instance that was witnessed by, several individuals, including my childhood friends, my mother, and, several, EMT, well, not EMT, fire department and police officers. So one day, it was a summer day. I had five of my friends over at the house. We were playing in the yard and just kind of messing around with our pit bull. Something to note, we had gotten a pit bull soon after we had moved into the house. It was a rescue, and the pit bull at absolute any cost would not enter into our hallway. It was a 3-bedroom, and all 3 bedrooms connected, to the length of the hallway and the bathroom. The house was kind of laid out in an L shape, if you were. And, there was a grate or a vent at the bottom, of the, hallway, you know, on the floor. And my pit bull would often, come sliding into the rooms. If you called it, you know, you called her, excuse me, into one of the rooms, she'd come sliding. She'd get a running start. Or if you had her attached to the leash or collar, she would have to be dragged through the hallway into one of the rooms. She absolutely avoided, the hallway. So one day, going back to the incident, one day, my mom was folding laundry. And my dad had been on a, bender. He'd been gone for, you know, 3-4 days at that point. I was in the living room on the couch with one of my buddies. My other three friends were, messing around, you know, somewhere outside. All of a sudden I hear my mom scream at the top of her lungs. It sends us all into a panic. I jump over the couch. I go sprinting for my bedroom, and, I see her standing there. She's, in the middle of my room, staring down at the wooden floor. And, I immediately come up beside her and I say, "Mom, what's wrong?" Her face was just absolutely without color. She was completely shocked. And mind you, there's three or four, you know, there's, let's see, three of my friends crowding into the doorway, staring in, also wanting to see what's going on. And my mom is talking to the floor. She's saying, "Ray," and that's my dad's name, "Ray, how did you get under there? How did you get under there? Is there anybody, talk to me, is there anybody else under there with you?" And I'm like, "Mom, who are you talking to?" She goes, "Your dad is under the floor." And I'm like, "Okay. No, he's not." And, she goes, Ray, let us know Ray, just talk to us. As clearly as you're hearing my voice, and again, witnessed by all of us there, and I'll duplicate this as best I can on my microphone, I hear banging, jumped back away from my floor and was like, oh my God, my dad's under the floor. And she goes, Ray, she's Ray, is there anybody under there with you? I hear, she hears, everybody hears a muffled voice. You know, not muffled. The voice is coming from under the ground. And the voice said, let me out. Let me out. Let me out. And my mom says, can you breathe? She goes, Samuel, grab the phone. Call 911. So I run over and I grab the phone. I call 911. Dispatcher says, what's your emergency? My dad's under the house. Dispatcher, is he trapped? How did he get into the... My dad's under the house. We don't know how he got under the house. Send an ambulance. They didn't send an ambulance. The first person that arrived at the scene was Officer Ingram. I'll never forget his name because of the incident. And Officer Ingram walked into my bedroom. My mom was still pleading with my father. Dad, you know, she was saying, Ray, stay with us. Talk to me. And then the officer walks in the room and he says, Mrs. Montoya, what is going on? And she says, my husband is under the house. And he stops and he goes, how did he get under the house? I don't know. And she goes, Ray, show the officer that you're under the house. My wall socket rattled. It actually started to rattle. Okay. The officer Ingram literally jumped back and grabbed for his weapon. He was so startled by the rattling of the wall socket that he jumped back and he was going to grab his weapon. He immediately radioed for emergency services. He says, you know, we need emergency services down here, gave the address. Within 10 minutes, the fire department had arrived at the house. We were actively hearing banging coming from the bottom under the house, a muffled voice saying, let me out, help. The fire department flipped my bed onto its side and they were drawing a chalk line in the middle of the floor, the wooden floor. They were drawing this big chalk line and they were talking to my dad. They were saying, Ray, move to the far corner of the house. Can you move? Move to the far corner. Do you hear me? I never knew there was a manhole in my closet. And here's how I discovered it. There was a 2x4 that ran from the top of my closet to the floor. And that baseboard that was secured by that 2x4 started to rattle as if somebody was underneath pushing and beating on this piece of board. The fire department actually cleared my closet out because of it, and they discovered it. And they said, "Well, we're gonna have to break down. You know, we can break down this the secure beam, and we may be able to gain access through this the closet space." I don't know how much time I have on this recording, so I may have to call back again and leave a second recording to finish this up. I just wanted to make you aware of that. So the fire department, they're bringing in heavy equipment. They're going to either cut a hole in my floor or they're going to, remove this support beam from my closet. While all this is going on, and they're telling my dad, the EMTs, the fire department is telling my dad, Ray, conserve your energy. Just breathe slowly. Just breathe. I'm assuming they were worried about oxygen. I don't know. Just breathe, Ray. Just breathe. We're going to get you out of there. Just breathe. Is there anybody else under there with you? My dad, you can hear him through the floor, said, yes. Yes, we're suffocating. We can't breathe. The EMTs are moving. I mean, the fire department is moving very fast at this point. My mom's freaking out. Get him out. All of a sudden, one of the fire department, don't know if he was a chief, don't know his rank, walks into the room. His demeanor caused everybody to stop what they were doing and turn and look at him. He had this look of just, terror. He looked absolutely terrified. And he said in a very low voice, there's nobody under there. The fire department individual, chief, whatnot, walks into the room, looks completely shocked and terrified. And he says, there's nobody under the house. There's nobody under there. Everybody had stopped what they're doing. Mind you, my bed is flipped on its side. There's a big white chalk circle drawn on the middle of the floor. They had cleared out my closet. Everybody stopped what they were doing. We all of us that were inside the room. So it was my mom, my friends. We immediately turned to him and said, what do you mean? Get my dad out from under the house. What are you talking about? He, his reaction was funny because he didn't try to reason with us. He went from shock and terror to, I don't know, like an irrational anger, because he yelled at us, everybody in the room, go look for your, and I guess use the language. He said, look for your fucking self. There is nobody under the house. And he was holding like an industrial heavy-duty flashlight. And so my mom grabbed the flashlight from him. He leads all of us outside. He had, what he had done was, on the left side of my house, where in my dog area, he had cleared the brush and found a vent, almost like a vent or a manhole, that was at the base of the house, and he had pulled broken. He had removed the screen that covered it. My mom got on her hands and knees with the flashlight, looked, put the flashlight into the hole, into the manhole area. And I said, Mom, what do you see? What do you see? We're all quiet, right? She's looking and she's looking and she's looking. And I see her hand, the flashlight, start to shake, like, violently. She stands up, and she looks at me, and she's stuttering. She says, I don't see him. And I took the flashlight from her. I said, no, man, let me look. I took the flashlight, got on my belly, stuck the flashlight in the manhole. I could see the foundation of the house under the manhole. These cinder blocks that were, you know, hold like these big blocks that were holding up what I would assume would be the frame of the house, or the floor plan. And inside of the light beam, so the light beam that's casted, I'm sweeping it back and forth between the corners of the house. And the only thing that I'm seeing is really dirty air and debris kind of floating in the light beam. There's a bunch of like floating debris. But I look what would be the left side of the house, where my room would, you know, well, kind of to the middle of the house. I looked at the ground there. And there was absolutely nothing, not a trash bag. There was nothing. There was nowhere for anybody to hide. There was nothing. I dropped the flashlight, got to my feet, and just walked away. I walked to the sidewalk staring into the street. And meanwhile, what I did not see happening was the mass and immediate evacuation by the fire department. They were literally out of the house so quickly. They left behind an axe. They left like a fireman's axe. They left behind other tools. They left behind chalk. They left behind a pair of gloves. Literally, they had left the house so quickly that they left their stuff behind. Officer Ingram, who had responded initially, he was, we were was at a complete loss for words. The strange thing that happened, though, was my dad was listening to the whole thing on a police scanner. He was in town. He was at my grandmother's house, and my grandmother's now boyfriend or fiance in their old age, you know, she had found another partner because my real grandfather had passed away. He was a retired highway patrol employee, and he used to keep a radio scanner inside of his house. And my dad was visiting them, and he was listening to the whole thing on the radio scanner. So he called over, and I picked up the phone, and it was his voice, and I almost dropped the phone. And I said, "Dad," I tried to explain, and he said, "What the hell are you talking about?" And I tried to explain to him what had happened. Officer Ingham had to take my mother into basically for an interview and for a psych eval. We were screaming at him at the top of our lungs, and he was so flustered during the whole time. He could barely talk. He was stuttering, stammering. He said, "You know, this is protocol." He's like, I have to do it. We were saying, "You heard it. You saw it. You're the one that radioed and dispatched for the fire department. You heard the, why would you be taking our mom in?" He's like, "Listen, she'll be back very shortly. It's something we have to do." And then he left, and my mom was released shortly later. The incident actually showed up in the Kalinga newspapers, you know, kind of as a, you know, mystery, event, but the story was not very, you know, filled in. You know, they never interviewed us. It was just basically Officer Ingham's account of responding to the house. After that, we decided to move, because the paranormal activity and, various events didn't stop. And it got to the point to where it was just, uncomfortable to live there anymore.
And that's where the story ends.
Is a very uncomfortable story.
Yeah.
Having a manhole in your closet.
Yeah.
In your closet.
That is bizarre.
And there's banging on it?
Mm-hmm.
I think you need to get another house.
That would be one of the weirdest things. I mean, I'm wondering if he's just describing it as a manhole, or if it literally was a manhole that they used to cover the hole that goes to the crawl space, you know? Because, I mean, there's a lot of homes where there's like a trap door or something somewhere that goes to access the lower portion of your home. If you have a home that has it, ours does not. Ours is sitting on a slab of concrete. But some homes have a lower, either a basement or quite literally like a spot that's maybe like 2 or 3 feet, that you can kind of access the pipes and things of that nature. But to have, you know, the dad, you know, the banging and all of that, that would just be so troubling. And I don't blame them for saying enough is enough. We're out.
Yeah. I also don't blame the fire department literally running as fast as they can out of the house.
That's got to be a call that those officers in the fire department, the firefighters, are still saying to this day and sharing stories of. Remember that one call? Remember when that happened? Like, you can't make that up. You know, there's a lot of stories that people in those fields have that you go, you can't make this up. But
I wonder if we could possibly find the newspapers.
That would be interesting to try. Yeah, that would be very interesting to try and find. I don't even know where to begin. We'd probably have to reach out to the caller and get some direction to find it. But that would be interesting. Thank you for that story, and thank you for sharing that with us here today on the program. That's going to wrap up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like the show, keep us on the air, become an extra podcast person, EPP at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. We would love to hear from you and get your support and help keep us on the air, get all the bonus content, advanced episodes, the archive. It's all there for you. Ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. For Harper, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to Real Ghost Stories Online.